I go away for a little bit, and Hurricane Wilma is now up to a Category 4, and just a few more miles per hour in speed moves up to a Category 5. This is a very fast-developing hurricane, extremely strong. So it's a 4 now, heading for a 5. We'll continue to monitor that all the time. And by the way, I want to say hi to all of you in Canada listening on what is now called the new Montreal Big Station, the 940, New Montreal. It's a 50,000 water, 940 AM. Congratulations. Great to have you with us as part of the Coast to Coast family. When we come right back, our guest Robert Moss and Dreams on Coast to Coast AM. Robert Moss survived three near-death experiences in childhood and has been dreaming with the departed all his life. He's the creator of active dreaming, an original synthesis of dream work and shamanic techniques for empowerment and healing. A former university professor of ancient history at the Australian National University, he is a best-selling novelist, shamanic counselor, and author of 5 books on dreaming and multidimensional reality. He is our special guest tonight on Coast to Coast. Robert, good to have you with us. How are you?
Good to be dreaming with you, George.
Absolutely. I dream sometimes, but lately they've been on major earth changes, Robert, and I can't figure out what's going on with myself. What do you think?
Well, you know, we dream into the collective condition. Dreams are not just individual experiences. We dream about the planet. We dream about the survival of our kind. We dream about other forces and species on the planet. We dream about all of it. And, of course, the other thing, George, is we don't actually have to go to sleep to dream. Dreaming, from my point of view, is not fundamentally about sleeping. That sounds like a contradiction to most Western listeners. But dreaming is fundamentally, for me, about waking up. Sometimes we wake up in our sleep. We have a big dream which shows us the larger reality, our larger self, gives us keys to healing and spiritual guidance. Sometimes we wake up wide awake. You know, we have that intuitive flash. Something steps through the curtain of our everyday consensual hallucinations. We become aware of a larger reality all around us. So what I teach is not just how to work with sleep dreams, but how to regard everything going on around us as if it might have some meaning and some symbolic resonance and tap into the larger patterns of life.
Do you believe, Robert, that dreams just may be real in terms of actually happening in maybe another dimension, perhaps?
Well, you know, superstring theory is telling us that there are 10 dimensions of physical reality. Some say 11. You know, there's a slight discussion about that amongst the scientists. 10 dimensions of physical reality. We're aware of 3D plus time, right? Where are the other dimensions of physical reality? They're hidden somewhere, enfolded inside everything else where the ordinary sensors and laboratory instruments cannot find them. Maybe those are places we go in dreaming. Maybe in dreaming we go to real worlds, which are physical as well as metaphysical, but are hidden from ordinary sensors and ordinary laboratory instruments. That's one of the speculations about dreaming. You know, ancient and indigenous people say this, George, the dream world is the real world. You know, waking life, where we're often driven by other people's expectations and routines and habits, is like a sleepwalk. You know, the dream world is the real world. That's what underlies the events and situations of waking life. And one thing to know about this, which I think I know from having monitored my own dreams and other people's for a very long time now, is this. We dream things before they happen. And this isn't just anecdotal. It's not just about dreaming this or that. Maybe we dream everything before it happens. You know, maybe everything before it comes into manifestation in this world is born, generated, created in a subtler reality, which we can call the dream time. If that is so, even as a hypothesis, my gosh, we need to know about it.
Yeah. Absolutely, and there's no question about it. And I also wonder if dreams continue in some form or fashion without the brain, for example. You know, if somebody, I just wonder, Robert, that if you die when you die, if dreams continue for those entities in that other state.
That's a beautifully stated question, George. Thank you for putting it so elegantly. I believe that when we die, we enter a dream state. And the dream state might go on for a very long time. All sorts of things go on in that dream state. In other words, what we're saying is maybe consciousness after physical death continues in a dream state. And maybe the way we get to know about that before we die is by dreaming on it. And what we might learn by dreaming on it more is that at death, consciousness separates from the body and the brain and survives in another form. It survives in other energy bodies, maybe. And it survives, initially at least, in a dreamlike state in which lots of landscapes and situations become accessible to our consciousness, which we could get to know right now if we just paid more attention to our dreams. So in my new book, The Dreamer's Book of the Dead, one of the fundamental propositions is that the path of the soul, the path of consciousness, if you prefer, after death, is maybe the same as the path of the soul in dreams. It's the way we get to know about what follows death, the best way to know.
When I was a young boy, I was pretty good in school. I was a good student, but I had to study hard in certain subjects, Robert. Others came very easy to me, the sciences and the mathematics. That was easy for me. The history and things like that I had trouble with. And I knew all the time before a major exam, I had to cram for it. I had to study. And I've got to tell you, for years, at that younger age, it was very frustrating for me. I'd study all night, and then, you know, I'd be lucky if I got a B on the test. All of a sudden, one day, and I don't know what happened to me, and I was always interested in unusual things, strange things. You know, I had an astral body projection at 11 years old.
Right.
I started, instead of cramming for these tests, instead of just trying to get all this information in one night, and I got nervous and it just didn't work for me. I decided just to go to sleep. And right before I fell asleep, I just told myself to think of the test and relax. And I went to bed. I wake up the next day, I go in there and I have the exam and I ace them all.
Yeah.
And my whole life changed that way. So
yes.
I started using dreams to get things done for myself.
Yes, you've just given us wonderful instruction on how to approach every test and challenge in life, not just exams at school or in college, but, you know, the other tests and challenges we face along the road. When I was a kid, I saved myself a lot of time boning up in advance of exams by dreaming the exam questions ahead of time. You know, I made a statement about that on the island of Bermuda a few years ago, and a wonderful black woman there who was the former Secretary of Education of the island of Bermuda got up and said, "I just want to endorse what Mr. Moss said," she said in a very British accent. "I got through my examinations exactly the same way. I vouch for it. All students should know this." But, you know, it's not just, as we're saying, it's not just about getting through the school exams. Our dreams will coach us and rehearse us for the challenges and, let me add, the opportunities that lie ahead on the roads of life. This is one of the practical survival functions of dreaming. We just do very much better if we'll put our needs, our questions, and our challenges to our sleep. And, you know, even when you wake up not remembering the dream, if you put the challenge to your sleep, you'll often wake up with a sense of how to handle things.
Your Absolutely.
Stray idea is going through your mind. You can solve it in your sleep. That's one of the things we need to know.
You know, if you don't remember it when you wake up, it doesn't mean it hasn't been fixed or accomplished yet.
That's exactly right. One of the things I say to people who are suffering a dream drought, and you know, there are a lot of people in our society who are not remembering their dreams, partly because, guess what? We're jangled out of sleep by the alarm clock, we're tickled awake, or the dog barks, the traffic booms, we've got to get out of the house, get to the office, we're so hurry sick, we don't make time for our inner lives. What I say to people is relax. You know, write down an intention for your sleep tonight. It can just be, I want to have fun in my dreams, or it can be, I want to rehearse the job interview, I want to find my soulmate. It doesn't matter what it is. Give yourself a juicy intention tonight before you go to sleep. And if you wake up, if you've got a dream, write it down and do some work on it. We can talk about that later. But if you don't have a dream, relax. Don't flunk yourself. Don't say, I'm a terrible person. I'm still not remembering my dreams. Just pay attention to those sensations, those feelings, those thoughts that are moving through your mind. You may have the answer without actually remembering the dream that gave it to you.
You are so right. I mean, if people could only learn to relax a little bit, to let their mind just wander in dream, I'm telling you, it would change their lives. They'd start waking up feeling better about the day.
Absolutely. Another thing I say to people who are suffering a dream drought is, again, relax. Pay attention to what's going on around you in waking life. Okay, you're not remembering sleep dreams, then let's pretend that what's going around you in waking life is a set of dream symbols, a set of dream happenings. It might not look like that initially if you're a prisoner of habit, but, you know, just pay attention to the first unusual, unexpected, weird thing that enters your field of perception and pretend that this is a message from the universe to you specifically. The oracle of all that is speaking to you through that bumper sticker, through that billboard on the side of the road, through the flight of that crow. This is a message to you from the world. It's funny how when we start paying attention to coincidences and the little oddities of everyday life, we open a gateway of perception inside ourselves. We start getting in touch with deeper knowledge.
In your particular case, the fascination with dreams has driven you. What happened? How did it start?
Well, I've been a dreamer all of my life, George. It's my home territory. You know, I talk funny. I was born in Melbourne, Australia. I've lived all over the place. My accent is a bit of a patchwork quilt. I always say when people say, where do you come from? I say, I'm from out of town. I mean, actually, I'm deeply from out of town. Wherever I've lived, I've always felt that. I am from the dream world in my own conception. I mean, I was born and grew up in Australia, the country of the dream time. You know, the dream time of the Aborigines.
Oh, yes, that's right.
And, you know, as a kid, I was a pretty sickly kid. I kept sort of trying to check out. We didn't actually have the phrase near-death experience when I was growing up in Australia. Raymond Moody hadn't written his first book on that subject at that time. So the Australian doctors would just say, oh, poor kid, he checked out again, didn't he? He died for a little while and came back. And those experiences, as other near-death survivors will well understand, changed my perception of reality. I mean, I knew I couldn't escape the knowledge that there's a world beyond the physical world. I couldn't escape the knowledge that we have bodies beyond the physical body. We have an energy body and an astral body and so on, because these are things I traveled in as a kid. I didn't particularly want to, but I was out there. And one of these experiences, I'm 9 years old. I'm in a hospital in Melbourne. I just had an emergency operation to get my appendix out because it was about to burst. I've been in hospital for pneumonia several times before that. I'm wandering down the corridor of the hospital. My physical body is on the operating table, but I can't stand the blood and the pain and the gossip of the nurses. So I'm wandering down the hall of the hospital in my, I guess, in my energy body, in my astral body. I see my mother grieving, and there's something coming in and out of her heart like a bird. And I don't want to look at her grief, so I go to the window. And I want to have some fun. I want to be a kid. I'm 9 years old. I want to go down to the fun park. So I somehow go through the window. And I go to Luna Park in Melbourne. It's got a great big moon-round face at the entrance to the park. And I think I'll ride on the ghost train, et cetera, for free. I'll look at the girls. And my intention, I don't understand what's happening. My intention is just to have some fun and fool around at the fun park. And suddenly I'm sucked into another world, a world that seems to be inside our one. The people are long and tall and pale and beautiful. And they receive me as a friend, and they adopt me, and I live among them. And I grow up to a ripe old age and become a father and grandfather and an elder and some kind of shaman, I guess. And I've forgotten about the body I left in the operating theater in Australia. And I guess I'm in my 90s when the body's used up and I'm cremated and I go up on the smoke. And suddenly I'm sucked back into the body of a 9-year-old boy lying on the operating table in the Albert Hospital in Melbourne.
Did you not want to come back?
I don't think so. I think actually I'd forgotten that I had this body of a 9-year-old boy, and I'd been living a pretty good life as a man in a different kind of world. And, you know, the world that I was in that body was a world of pain. I mean, I had a perfectly nice family situation, a bit boring, a bit mild, a bit bland, but it was okay. But I didn't particularly want to come back, but I was sent back. And you've had an experience like that. You're living in a conservative era, in a conservative corner of that time. Who do you talk to? The only person I could talk to safely at that time was an Aboriginal kid who was very matter-of-fact about these things. Oh, yeah, we do that kind of thing. We get sick, we go off to world of the Mimi spirits, and then we stay there till we get well, then we come back. So, you know, from experiences like that in childhood, I've known through my own experience from the earliest years that I can remember that there are worlds beyond the physical, and we can go there. And I've learned since childhood that you don't actually have to go through the extremity of the near-death experience to know those worlds. You can do it more safely, you can do it more comfortably, and the easiest way to do it is to start waking up to what's going on when you're dreaming.
You sound enlightened, and you could feel just the karma coming from you, Robert. So I'm not sure you might have experienced this, but also in this state, is there a dark side to all of this?
Well, the dark side that we're going to, there's a dark side to everything, of course. You can't have a universe that's all light, or else you wouldn't see the light. I mean, light carries shadow. Shadow and light travel together. Is there a dark side to dreaming? Well, where you go in dreaming, what you encounter in dreaming is connected to your intentions, your choices, your desires, your appetites, just as it is in physical life. You know, there are people who think that it's fun to hang out in a certain kind of bar or a certain kind of crack house or a certain kind of porn palace or whatever, which might be hells to some of us, they'd be hells to me, and they choose those places because that's where their appetites and desires take them. In dreaming, it's the same. There are bad neighborhoods in the dream world just as there are in ordinary life. In that sense, there's a dark side.
How did you finally realize that the dream world may be just as real as the world we're in now?
Well, one of the things that has coached me in that is experiences in which I've been present, I believe, not only at events before they take place on the physical plane. In other words, I've seen events before they manifested in the physical plane, but I felt that events are being created in another order of reality before they manifest. But when you start to feel that you have access in a certain state of consciousness that I will call dreaming, to the creation of events in this world, then you start asking yourself about the nature of reality. Just suppose that every event, every situation we encounter in waking life begins fundamentally somewhere else. I've been keeping dream journals for a very long time, George, and what I've been able to track is that I have dreamed events years, decades before they manifested in this world. And as I become more conscious of that, I'm sometimes able to choose how those events will play out. So That's one way of coming to the realization that the dream world is at least as real and maybe more real than what goes on in this life.
Sometime tonight, I want to ask you what you think it is, because I think that's the key to a lot of the things we're going through right now. I dream a lot, I think, Robert. I don't remember them as much as I used to when I was younger. Why is that?
Well, part of it is the choice we make about what we're going to do with our waking time, of course. You know, what are we going to do first thing in the day? If we're going to, you know, have to get out of bed right away and don't have a little time to linger and languor in bed and wiggle around and let the dreams come back to us, then they're likely to be interrupted. I think you are a dreamer. You've already given us some impeccable and wise advice on dreaming, mm-hmm. but a lot of us in our society are blocked by fear, you know. Let me put it as gently as I can. You know, we all have a control freak somewhere in our ego, you know, the part of us that doesn't want to let anything else take charge, doesn't want to encounter a larger self or a larger perspective. And the control freak that lives in our little everyday mind is terrified of the big self, you know, the deeper self with its wiser knowledge and its challenges to us to get in touch with some deeper purpose. And that part of us is fearful. Let me give you a quick example. When I started living in this country, I started dreaming of the bear, you know, the bear. I don't remember having such important dreams about the bear when I was living in Australia or in Europe. In some of these dreams, there's this enormous bear who is in my space. And I'm scared of the bear because the bear is so much bigger than me. I feel like a midget compared to this enormous animal. It's not threatening me, but I'm nervous because it's so big. It's so much bigger than me. And finally, I say to myself, hey, Robert, go back into this space and confront this animal, this bear, and see what it's doing in your territory. So I'm sitting in an easy chair, and my intention is to re-enter the dream, which is the basic technique I teach, going back inside the dream space and confronting a fear or dialoguing with a dream character. I'm back inside my dream. There's the bear. I can smell it. It's feral. It's rank. It's huge. The claws are out. It's scary. And it takes some act of courage, some minimal courage, to brave up and step up to the bear. And when I do that and accept the bear hug, the great embrace, we're suddenly the same size, and I feel much better, and the bear wants me to look down at the heart, and I look down at the heart, and I see that the bear and I are joined at the heart by something like a thick umbilical pumping life force back and forth. And I dance with the bear, and the bear says, call on me, and I'll show you what people need to be healed. Now, I didn't know at that time, because I was new to North America, I didn't understand that the bear is the great medicine animal of Native American peoples. It's the medicine animal, the animal spirit of this country. And most Native peoples of this continent, when they want to call in healing, when they want alternative medicine, they call on the bear and all that it represents.
Exactly.
I realized in that experience that I had been running away from, dodging, something that was a deeper aspect of a power of healing that was available to me and, of course, to many, many other people. I was running away from it simply because it was much bigger than I was in my everyday attitudes. So to come back to your question, one of the reasons why a lot of us in our society are out of touch with our dreams is we are out of touch with our larger selves. We're out of touch with our life purpose. but out of touch with our souls. I mean, this is one of the things that ancient indigenous peoples know about dreaming. Dreams put us in touch with the soul. It's all about soul.
Robert, when we come back, let's talk about nightmares. How do some people overcome some of these terrors? Healing in your dreams, you can really get things done. I'm telling you, it's happened to me. I'm George Norrie, back in a moment on Coast to Coast AM with our guest Robert Moss. We'll be right back. Well, in our last hour, we'll open up the phone lines. We'll give you an opportunity to talk with Robert Moss about dreaming. Maybe even you're having strange dreams. Maybe he can help you take a look at just what they mean. Perfect Possession is a CD. It's an Art Bell interview with the late Father Malachi Martin on exorcisms. It's yours free when you order the After Dark newsletter or renew your newsletter. Call 1-888-727-5505. You can also go online at coasttocoastam.com. And welcome back to Coast, I'm George Norrie, and of course, Robert Moss's website. Those of you who like to go to websites, mossdreams.com. It's linked up with his name at coasttocoastam.com. Robert, nightmares. We've all had them. I don't know why, what causes them. Sometimes I've always wondered, was it the pizza you had before you went to sleep? But what's going on with nightmares?
Well, let me say something that may sound shocking, George. Nightmares are a gift.
A gift?
Just let that thought linger for a moment. All right. I think it's like this. We have sources of knowledge, benign sources of knowledge, that try to communicate with us through dreams and intuition. And we shut them out because we don't want to hear what they're saying. You know, part of me knows what's going on in my body, for example. It knows I might develop a certain symptom if I don't take better care of my body and eat in a certain way. And I don't want to hear about that. You know, I just want to go on as I am. So I shut out the dreams. And I might shut out the body's complaints and not pay any attention. So you know what happens? Those issues pursue me in the dream state using more scary and dramatic language, like a friend who's really trying to get through to you, rattling on the door, even throwing a brick through your window to get your attention. It becomes a nightmare. I wake up screaming. I slam the door on the nightmare and I say, thank goodness it's just a dream. It's just a nightmare. I go on. And you know what happens then? That issue comes and bites me in the rear end in waking life. So I think that's what's going on in nightmares. A nightmare is not essentially a scary dream. Well, yes, it's scary.
Why do people scream sometimes in real life while they're dreaming?
That's right. They might be scared. There might be things to be scared of. But a nightmare is not just a scary dream. It's an interrupted dream. It's a dream we run away from and leave unfinished. And the way to deal with nightmares, this might be a hard thing to hear, but the way to deal with nightmares is to turn around, stop running away from that issue, confront the terror on its own ground, go back inside the dream space if you can, or turn around and meditate on it and try and dialogue with the terror, try and get more information from the dream and try and deal with the thing in its own space before it gets you in waking life. A quick example. You know, you dream that someone's trying to break into your place. You dream of an intruder and it's scary and terrible things are happening. You need to know, wait a minute, is this something that could happen to your apartment or your house? Could it be a physical intruder who breaks in and does bad things? And if that is a possibility and your dreams are coaching you on that, you need to learn by getting better information from the dream how to keep yourself safe. But maybe the intruder in your dream is not a literal burglar or mugger or person breaking into your house. Maybe the intruder is a disease that's trying to break into your body. So you need to know about that.
That's a good point.
But maybe the intruder is also some larger part of you. We were talking about this earlier. Some bigger part of you, bigger and bolder and braver part of you that you don't want to face because you don't want to look at the larger issues of your life. Whatever the nature of the intruder, you need to know what it is. You need to confront it on your own ground and you need to do something about it. Or you dream of a car accident. This is a recurring theme. I couldn't be talking to you, George, if I had not used information about car accidents in my dreams to avoid literal, possibly fatal accidents on the road several times. But you need to know whether the car accident in your dream is a literal car accident, in which case you need to know when, where, what intersection, what's the other vehicle so you can avoid it, or whether it's a symbolic dream relating to your marriage or your relationship or your job so you can take action on that front. The correct strategy for nightmares is never to turn around and say, goodness, it's just a dream, I can forget about it. The correct action is to turn around, try and figure out what issue the nightmare is bringing to you and do something about it.
What creates the dream, Robert? Is it the brain, the physical brain, something in our head, or is there something else out there in the universe that creates this?
Well, I think the brain is a marvelous transceiver, but the brain is not the beginning and the end of consciousness. I mean, people these days talk about non-local mind, right? The brain is a transceiver made of meat operating within a possibly limitless mind to which we have access and into which we travel in dreams, in visionary journeys, and after death. I mean, we are never confined to the body or the brain except by our own limited conceptions of reality, from my point of view. I'm not underrating the significance of the brain. I was working just today in one of my groups with a woman who recently had a stroke, and she had a fascinating dream since the stroke in which basically the landscape of her brain and all the elements in her brain were dramatized in ways that might help her through her own imaging to assist the doctors to bring about a full recovery. So I was privileged today to listen to a fascinatingly detailed account of a dreamscape which really is an animated picture of the brain and how it operates. So our dreams do reflect, indeed in the most literal way, sometimes what's going on in the brain. But any attitude towards consciousness that confines it to the brain, you know, is tikkayun. I mean, consciousness is never confined to any part of the physical plane except by our limited notions about reality.
Well, why are these messages done in such a way where we have to struggle to interpret what they might be? Why don't they just pour it out to us in a very literal sense?
Well, you know, sometimes we're being invited to expand our vocabulary. Let me just make a quick personal note about this. You know, we have different styles of dreaming. You know, it's an individual thing. One of my personal styles of dreaming is that all of my life I've had a tendency to dream in languages I do not know. But if I knew absolutely nothing about them, I'd have a hard time doing anything with the information. I mean, the most recent example was my dreams in the Mohawk Indian language, which started when I moved to the edge of Mohawk Indian country in upstate New York, and I started dreaming in a language I did not know. I mean, I really did not know this language and didn't know the people involved and knew nothing about American Indians. But because the dreams happened again and again and involved a fascinating ancient woman healer, I started writing them down phonetically, finally found some Mohawk people who could translate these bits and pieces for me, who said to me, "Robert, you're dreaming in an archaic version of our language. It's not exactly the way we speak it anymore. It's like Shakespearean English compared to modern Mohawk. We believe you've been making some visits and receiving visitations from one of our ancient ones. We believe that she's inviting you to learn her language so that you can bring back ancient knowledge which has been lost to our people as well as to the larger community." Whoa! You know, our dreams invite us in one way or another to expand our understanding. That might take work. It might take research. It doesn't all come in a New Age soap bubble in which you know everything all at once. Sometimes you've got to work. I have dreams about quantum physics, but because I am a bit of a slouch when it comes to the study of quantum physics, I can't translate most of these dreams unless I run to my friends who do know about quantum physics and get them to help me, which I do. So once again, you know, we are invited by our dreams to move beyond the limited state of our current knowledge into a larger multidimensional perspective. And if we're willing to do some work, you know, there's probably no aspect of knowledge which is not accessible to us through trained and practiced dreaming.
Do you dream in color or black and white?
Yes, we all dream in colors. The only people who think that they don't dream in color are probably people with infrequent dream recall who are mostly remembering experiences of wandering about in the dark at night. They're out of their bodies, they're wandering about in the dark, so they think it's all black and white. There are black and white phases in everybody's dreams. I mean, I dream of black and white movies, for example, and some of my dreams will take the form of black and white movies. But I think unless we are literally lacking color perception, which some of us do, we are all dreaming in color whether or not we remember it.
You know, is there a science to this? You know, Sigmund Freud used to deal with dreams. Carl Jung used to deal with some of the dreams. Are they still doing this now, Robert?
There are all sorts of people who have scientific approaches to dreams, and they're all valuable. As a matter of fact, I would give room for any approach to dreams that honors the dreamer, the individual dreamer, as the final authority on the meaning of his or her dreams. Where Freud went so devastatingly wrong was not in his theory about this or that, but he basically put dream interpretation in the hands of a paid and certified clerisy, I mean, a professional caste of dream interpreters. That's a no-no for me. Dreaming is far too important, far too powerful to let other people tell you what your dreams mean. You know, we might be mystified. We might need some suggestions for other people. We don't want to hand the meaning of our dreams or our lives over to somebody else. There's a power here to be claimed. But when it comes to the science of dreaming, I mean, there are many aspects to this, from the study of what's going on physiologically when your brain waves are moving during sleep, but to the connection between dreaming and the multidimensional reality. For me, the most interesting scientific approaches to dreams are both the most ancient and the most futuristic. I mean, the most modern. They're of tomorrow's science and of ancient science. Ancient civilizations made dreaming an absolutely central priority. You go back to Egypt, for example. They considered it so important that they built fantastic buildings, which we mistakenly call tombs and mortuaries, basically as chambers for dream travel, conscious dream travel to other star systems and other realities. That's how important they thought it was. Their science of dreaming was an experiential science of traveling in consciousness, traveling in energy bodies, beyond the physical plane, to be in touch with what matters. From their point of view, that means being in touch with the gods and being in touch with intelligences in the Sirius star system. In future science, we're probably going to find that dreaming, conscious dreaming, trained and practiced dreaming, is the key to time travel. It's the key to understanding what superstring theorists are talking about. It's the key to understanding parallel universes. And the scientific approach in relation to this, George, is experiential. What does that mean? It means that it requires research conducted inside the dream state, not just standing around measuring brainwaves, but getting out there, getting into the dream space, dreaming together, going on journeys together in consciousness. And this, of course, is what I write about in my books and what I teach people to do.
Let me mention this quick thing on a hurricane we're monitoring here, Robert. By the way, it is extremely dangerous. Now, what did they say? It is a Category 5 hurricane. A reconnaissance plane has measured 175-mile-an-hour winds. This is a huge, huge monster, and it is barreling down there, and we'll just keep our eyes on this situation. Very dangerous situation. Now, that is a nightmare, Robert, isn't it?
It's a physical nightmare. Let me note that we dream about these natural disasters, too, of course. It's sometimes difficult to tell if we dream of a hurricane or a tsunami, whether we are dreaming about an emotional storm in our own lives or our own families, or whether we're dreaming about a natural disaster that will affect millions of people. But there's a practical aspect here again. You remember the Asian tsunami, you know, around the end of last year, which killed a lot of people in Southeast Asia. Some of the people who escaped the tsunami were the Andamanese Islands, a tribal shamanic people who are dreamers. They are in the habit of dreaming collectively on survival matters for the community, and they just got out of the way. Yes, they studied the movements of animals, they knew about the movements of water, they're in tune with natural forces, but they also dreamed what was coming, abandoned their coastal settlements, headed to the hills, and survived the tsunami unscathed. So it's worth noting, when it comes to collective situations, collective disasters, that we have the ability to dream guidance, not only for ourselves, but possibly for whole communities and our whole nations. I'm not saying we should hand the business of meteorology on TV over to dreamers, but I think that dreamers have information on these things too.
Well, some great scientists have dreamed before they invented. And it seems like in your dream state, that's where some of your creativeness really shines.
Absolutely. I don't know. I write about some of these scientists in my book, Conscious Dreaming. I can't think of a major scientist that I know anything about who has not been, in a fundamental sense, a dreamer, including Isaac Newton. I mean, we think of the Newtonian universe as a sort of clockwork universe, but Newton's great discoveries came in a state of dream or reverie. I mean, notoriously, Einstein's discovery of the relativity theory came out of a state of dreamlike reverie. Let me note that the twilight zone, you're not quite awake, you're not quite asleep, you're drifting a little bit in consciousness, you have a loosely focused attention. This is an incredibly creative state, and many of the great scientific breakthroughs, as many of the great artistic inspirations and literary inspirations, come in that state. And it applies right across the board. I mean, many of our real entrepreneurs, many of our best generals create and see and plan from that state. Julius Caesar used to enter the state of half reverie, half awake, half asleep, to plan his campaign.
George Patton, I think.
George Patton. I mean, it's an open secret that some of our most successful and creative people in all fields, you know, whether it's cuisine to the military to science, have operated in this state. It's where they are at home. It's where they get their best ideas. They enter in a state of active imagination, whether it's asleep or in the twilight zone or in a state of focused reverie, and that's where the good things come from.
If someone doesn't dream or if someone doesn't remember their dreams, do you think they become physically ill?
I think they're vulnerable because they are missing. They're missing a lot of good things. They're missing a lot of good advisories. You know, let me go to indigenous wisdom on this. I wrote a book called Dreamways of the Iroquois about my encounter with the Iroquois Indians, which I mentioned earlier, the Mohawks in particular. The Iroquois Indians of the Northeast say this: if you are not in touch with your dreams, if you have no connection with your dreams, you've lost a part of your soul. And this might be so serious that it will make you sick. It could certainly make you depressed, fatigued, prone to mood changes and character swings because you're suffering what they call soul loss. You've lost a part of yourself that is the dreamer. And in losing your connection with the dream world, you've lost your connection with the magic and the energy of soul. And there is a need for you to get back the part of you that can dream, because with it comes your vital energy, the energy that sustains your body, the energy that puts you in touch with your fundamental life purpose. I mean, let me just say very quickly, fundamental to health is meaning and purpose in life, right? I mean, remember Viktor Frankl, who read a wonderful book after World War II, survived the death camps, called Man's Search for Meaning. I would say this: humans, we humans need meaning and purpose in our life exactly as we need food and air. And one of the ways we get in touch with the meaning and purpose of our lives is through dreaming across all the spectrum of consciousness that I'm talking about. Sleep dreams, intuition, paying attention to coincidence, getting unplanned, getting off the ordinary track. We get in touch with the purpose of our lives, and we get sick on one level or another if we are not serving the deeper purpose of our lives. I believe this is a fundamental reality, and it's central to our health.
Well, you know, I believe also, though, that you can heal yourself. You can find out where your ailments might be in your dream state. I wonder how many people realize the strength of doing things like that, Robert.
I think old-fashioned doctors have never forgotten that, actually. There's a physician in my local circle tonight who was talking about precisely that. The dreams have enormous diagnostic value. Let's just talk about that for a second.
Sure.
I mean, our bodies know what's going on inside them, right? I mean, in our heads, we may not want to know, but our bodies know. And one of the things going on in dreams relevant to our health and well-being is that the body shows us in pictures and in dramas what's going on inside it. And, you know, this is a wonderful source of diagnostic information. I was talking with a dear friend of mine also today who got a very clear and direct message about her health in a dream in which her departed father appeared to her. Now we're entering the realms of the dead now. Her departed father appears to her in a doctor's gown with a doctor accompanying him, I've forgotten which, and yells at her, "You have breast cancer, get to a doctor now." Wanda took that advisory. She'd been neglecting other warnings of a vaguer kind, went to a doctor, and basically that set her on a path of healing. She needed to go. Her dead father came as the messenger, telling her lovingly but urgently, get to a doctor now because this is going wrong in your body. So we get messages from inside our bodies, but we also, and this is central to my new book, The Dreamer's Book of the Dead, George, we also get messages from people on the other side who are looking out for us, from our family angels, so to speak.
That's what I want to talk a lot about with you, Robert, next hour when we come back about this, and also about your active dreaming and how that relates to dream interpretation. Is it the same or different?
Well, we go far beyond dream interpretation. I don't think it's enough to sit around analyzing dreams. There's energy, magic, and healing in the dream space that we want to bring through into our bodies and our lives. So what I do is I teach people to get out there. I teach people to go consciously into the dream state, do good things within it, have fun, have adventure, receive healing, and bring back gifts into the body, into the world.
Do you think mediums, the good ones, who actually communicate with the dead are doing it, is setting it up in dreams, perhaps?
Well, Many of the best mediums that I know, and my great aunt was one of Australia's very best mediums, as well as a very fine opera singer, so it runs in my family. Many of the best mediums operate in a dreamlike state, either by simply shifting consciousness and connecting with what is there in the energy around them, or by using their sleep dreams to do it. But, you know, here's an open secret again, George. We are all psychic. We're all psychic. We have a direct line. If we're interested in talking to the departed, we can do it ourselves. If we're interested in talking to our spiritual guides, we can do it for ourselves. Some of us are blocked, so we'll go to other people to get unblocked. But fundamentally, there is a direct line waiting for us if we're ready to use it.
And if we use it, we can use it for incredible things, can't we?
We can indeed. And one more thing to know about this at this stage is the following. You're asking about the departed, the dead entering a dreamlike state. The dead are dreaming of us. They're dreaming their way towards us. They're trying to reach us in dreaming. And probably there are more people on the other side who are trying to reach us through dreaming than there are people on our side who are interested or actively involved in receiving them. This is something vitally important to understand.
When we come back, we will talk about contacting the dead, especially in dreams.